Catherine Lanfer, sitting in for Leonard Lope. We all think we know Machiavelli, the author of The Prince, the go-to guy when you need Renaissance-era real politic advice you can use in real time. But Ross King begs to differ. The author of best-selling novels and nonfiction tomes, including Brunelleschi's Dome and Michelangelo and the Pope's Ceiling, he was a natural choice when the Eminent Lives series of biographies needed their own go-to guy to write a concise corrective. The result, Machiavelli, Philosopher of Politics, will surprise anyone who hasn't looked too closely at the actual life of the man who gave cunning a good name. While we remember him for his political writings, Machiavelli was also known for his poetry, his plays, his body songs. He was a father, a farmer, and a military engineer. Most telling, the master of political spin couldn't take his own advice. We'll find out more as Ross King joins us here in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay, so if Machiavelli was alive today, he'd want to direct.
That's right, yes. He possibly wouldn't be all that good at it, which is the great irony of his life.
Now, describe the times he came of age in. Let's put him in his setting.
Well, virtually nothing is known of his so-called formative years. He really doesn't appear on the stage of history until he's 28 years old, sort of in the late 1490s. So he's just come of age, just attained his majority. And it's a very violent period in Florentine history. The Dominican there were many violent periods in Florentine history, but this is one of the more violent ones. The man who essentially had ruled Florence in a kind of theocracy, Girolamo Savonarola, Dominican friar, was just executed in May of 1498. 2 weeks after his execution, he was hanged and burned in the middle of the public square. This young, unknown man named Niccolo Machiavelli became second chancellor of Florence, which was a very prestigious, very important post to hold at that time.
How did he come to power?
Well, no one is entirely too sure, but I think it worked then the way it works now. Family connections. His father was an unsuccessful lawyer, but a very bright man who seemed to be well connected sort of with a group of Florentine humanists, including the man who was the first chancellor of Florence. And it appears this first chancellor probably had been young Niccolo's university instructor a number of years earlier. And so when he wanted someone to sort of work alongside him in the seat of government in Florence, he thought of Niccolo first.
What kind of people did this post give him access to?
It gave him access to all of the most powerful people in Europe. Within a year or two of walking into his office, he was meeting with the King of France, Louis XII. He went to witness the election of the Pope, Julius II, in 1503, and then went on a number of military expeditions with Julius as the sort of Florentine witness to these. He associated with Cesare Borgia and became quite close to him, the son of Pope Alexander VI. And so really he had access to all of the very important people in Europe. And as he later wrote, he learned all about the actions of men and their ways of doing things.
What kind of an observer was he?
He was a very astute one for the most part. His advice wasn't always paid attention to because he was rather impatient with his political masters in Florence, and he would want them to be somewhat more dramatic than and decisive than they were. I mean, in Florence, everything was put to a vote to spread the blame for whatever went wrong as widely as possible. And Machiavelli, as you can imagine, doesn't like that style of leadership. He admired Cesare Borgia, whose style of leadership was to arrange strangulations and beheadings. And Machiavelli was extremely impressed with this and actually wrote to his superiors and said, you know, this prince is very wonderful and magnificent, and this is someone from whom we can learn and to whom we must ally ourselves. But the political masters in Florence, possibly to their credit, didn't want to have a lot to do with him.
Well, this perhaps would explain how Machiavelli got such a bad rap.
That's right. I mean, I think he suffers from a kind of guilt by association. Part of that is from his association and worship of Cesare Borgia, also the Medici family that he was associated with on and off.
But to put this in context, he was living in a time when if you didn't have a decisive leader, cities would fall. I mean, it seems to me that in our own day, it doesn't sometimes feel as if the consequences are as immediately severe.
That's right. Florence was extremely vulnerable because it was during Machiavelli's tenure of power between 1498 and then 1512 when he lost his power. Florence was a republic and it had no military of its own. It had to hire people to fight for it. And so if Florence is going to war with someone or if it was threatened by someone, Machiavelli was the one who went and arranged the warlord that they were going to have protect their interests. And Machiavelli didn't like this. He thought, in Florence, we need to be defended by our own people. We need to have a citizens' militia. And he was always conscious of the vulnerability of Florence in terms of its decision-making, in terms of its ability to defend itself against foreign aggressors, of whom, in the early part of the 16th century, there were many.
How would you characterize his dealings with the Medici?
They were very fraught. He may have been a member of the Medici circle in the early 1490s. He probably knew Lorenzo the Magnificent, who died in 1492. Machiavelli would have been very young at that point. But it does appear that he knew a number of members of the Medici family. However, the Medici were expelled from Florence in 1494. Machiavelli came to power a couple of years later in his post. And the whole thrust of politics in Florence when Machiavelli was second chancellor was keeping the Medici out of power.
In fact, I think that if you're only a casual observer of Machiavelli, you don't know that one of the central contradictions is that he had to lose power in order to gain the time to write the books that gave him his lasting fame.
That's right.
How did he lose power?
In 1512, the Medici came back. They came storming back on the tips of Spanish steel, Spanish mercenaries. And within weeks, Machiavelli was thrown out of his office. And the Medici did not trust him, probably rightly so initially. Machiavelli himself would write in The Prince that, you know, if you take power, you have to get rid of all the people who came before you. So 1512, Machiavelli loses his position. He's banned from Florence. He can't set foot in Florence. He's sent into exile, which is the family farm 6 miles south of Florence. And it's there in a state of depression, I think a real true depression. He begins writing The Prince, which he sees as, I think in the first place, his way back into power with the Medici. I mean, it's often described as a job application form. And in some ways it is that. But also it's a kind of self-help manual as Machiavelli tries to understand how he can reverse his ill fortune and make his way back up in the world. But you're right. Had he not lost his job, he would not have written The Prince.
We are talking to Ross King. He is the latest author from the HarperCollins Eminent Lives series. In this case, we are talking about Machiavelli, philosopher of politics. Did he get a bad rap? We'd like to know what you think. You can always, of course, give us a call, 212-433-9692. You can also check out our show page at wnyc.org. What was the initial reaction to The Prince?
Very muted. It fell on stony ground. Machiavelli presented it to one of the Medici princes, Lorenzo II, the grandson of Lorenzo the Magnificent. He had the bad luck to give it to Lorenzo at the moment someone else was giving him a pair of hounds, and Lorenzo liked dogs more than he liked books, and so he immediately went off to hunt with his dogs, and the prince gathered dust, and really only a handful of people knew of it in Machiavelli's lifetime. He died in 1527, and at that time it had not been printed. It only existed in manuscript form.
So how did it gain the fame that we give it today?
Well, it was printed a few years after his death by a very prestigious printer, and interestingly enough, there wasn't a lot of reaction to it in the first few decades after Machiavelli's death, after it was printed. It was, however, during the Counter-Reformation, put on the Index of Forbidden Books. I mean, I think in some ways that maybe is the beginning of its notoriety. As soon as it's banned, it's like anytime you ban anything is very good marketing for whoever has written it.
I'm sure he would have approved.
Absolutely. And he was not an enemy of the Catholic Church, but I think he did take a somewhat cynical view towards it. But I think the Catholic Church decided that Machiavelli never said the end justifies the means, although he does say that in one of his plays. But the end that Machiavelli is concerned about is good government and a strong and powerful state. He's not concerned about the afterlife and the soul and things like that. And I think that's what alarmed the Catholic Church.
Now, what were the big questions that he concerned himself with?
I think in The Prince, first and foremost, what he's concerned about, well, the way he describes the book, I mean, he sort of wrote his own little blurb for it very handily. He said it's about how to gain power, how to maintain it, and how not to lose it, how to fight off everyone else. But the central way of doing that is to control a certain variable that he's obsessed with, both in The Prince and in his own life, and that's fortune, fortuna, capital F, Lady Fortune, this female figure who is a kind of anarchic character, as Machiavelli sees her in Human Affairs, someone who can raise you up and then take you down just as quickly, because Machiavelli witnessed the rise of Cesare Borgia in the late 1490s, early 1500s, and then his dramatic fall in 1503, 1504. And that really set him thinking, how has this happened to Cesare? He seems to have done everything right, and yet something happened. And his conclusion, surprisingly, from the point of view of, I think, political scientists who like to see Machiavelli as the founding father of their faith, the man who laid down the laws of politics, he really does see it in terms of this pagan goddess of fortune, who he says it was the extraordinary malignity of Lady Fortune that brought down Cesare.
And I think you are leading us to yet another of his many contradictions.
That's right. There are many in him. He's a very slippery figure, but he is seen as the person who first gave us the kind of vision of power politics and realpolitik. And I think that's what many people have taken away from Machiavelli, and rightfully so. But there's this other element to him, which is he is very much of his age. And when he wanted to try to understand why something happened, the first thing he would do would be to go to a fortune teller or consult an astrologer. For example, when Cesare Borgia fell in 1503, Machiavelli wrote to the chair in astronomy at the University of Padua and said, why did this happen? Could Cesare have, do the stars control our fortunes, or could Cesare have overthrown these celestial influences? And I think that's something we don't think of when we think of Machiavelli. We think of him as a much more modern figure than that, rather than someone who is worrying about the influence of the stars on our lives. But that element is in everything he writes.
How much of what he was because he was an idealist?
Well, he's an idealist in some ways and not in some of his books and not in others. He's one book that I haven't mentioned that his reputation also rests on is The Discourses, and which I think is a much more idealistic book in a way than The Prince. The Prince is quite ironic, quite cynical, whereas The Discourses is almost dramatically, diametrically opposed to it, insofar as he's not concerned with creating a princedom. He's concerned with good government and a republic, citizens who are responsible, a government that has no corruption.
You can't help but think, though, of the old saw that, a cynic comes from an idealist.
That's right. I mean, and possibly Machiavelli's cynicism came out of what happened to him and the Republic of Florence in the first decade of the 16th century, and the way that it was quashed, and he was quashed, and he lost power, and he became very disillusioned with politics in general.
How often do people read into Machiavelli what they want to see?
Well, that's probably true of most authors. Most good authors can become a sounding board for, or you can unfurl your banner over them. I think Machiavelli maybe suffers from that or enjoys it perhaps more than almost any other writer in history. And you can say it's misinterpretation, that Machiavelli is being misinterpreted, but nevertheless, his writings have these contradictions and misinterpretations almost built into them, because he will say one thing at one point and something very different at another. And so it's very difficult to weigh these things up and understand what his position actually is.
We haven't spent really any time talking about his other work. Talk for a minute about Machiavelli, the body songwriter.
Well, if Machiavelli died in 1527, and if we were having a radio program about him as his obituary in June of 1527, we'd be talking about this wonderful playwright, this man who transformed drama in Florence and was famous not only in Tuscany, but also in Lombardy. And his fame had flown all over northern Italy, it was said, with a number of plays that he wrote. And that was really what had sealed his reputation and, interestingly enough, got him back in with the Medici. He hoped the prince would, but as I was saying, he was spurned by Lorenzo II de' Medici. There was a Medici Pope, Leo X, by 1513. He was the fun-loving Pope, and he heard about this wonderful play in Florence written by this person named Machiavelli, and he commanded a performance of it in Rome, in the Vatican, in 1520. Machiavelli then wrote a number of other plays, and really his rehabilitation came about thanks to his writing these sort of little smutty comedies that had carnival songs in them and entertained the masses rather than his handbook for princes.
We are out of time, but I want to give you a quick chance. If there's any misconception about him that you would like to correct, what is it?
Well, I think everyone thinks he's a horrible, nasty little man, but he wasn't. All of his friends loved him. He was a very witty, engaging personality. And when he went off on these long journeys, everyone in Florence missed him terribly and longed for his return. So he gets a lot of bad press, but maybe that's not his fault.
I want to thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, Ross King is the author of Machiavelli, Philosopher of Politics, part of the HarperCollins Eminent Live series. And I want to remind you that he'll be giving a talk tonight at the 92nd Street Y at 8 p.m. Again, that's Ross King speaking tonight at the 92nd Street Y. Coming up, of course, we're going to be talking to Porochista Kakpor, an Iranian-American author, with her debut novel.